Coming up on Tech News Today, BlackBerry is up for sale. HTC gets some help from Iron Man, and NBC News buys citizen journalism. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, August 12, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by TechServe. TechServe assists U.S. businesses of all sizes with their technology needs, including Apple, Avid, Adobe, and HP solutions. Visit techserve.com/TNT and receive a complimentary iPad deployment assessment. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT8. And by RingCentral. We do everything in the cloud. That's why I love my cloud-based phone system by RingCentral. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral is $20 a month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. Buy one desk phone, get a second phone free, up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zachter.
I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show. We try to keep you up to date. Most important stories in the tech world, put them in some context for you. Starting with the top 10 stories of the day in the news fuse. Somebody want to buy BlackBerry? Because they're up for sale. BlackBerry announced a special committee to investigate strategic alternatives. These alternatives could include partnerships, joint ventures, alliances, or, I don't know, a sale, something like that. According to a BlackBerry press release, that's what's going to happen. Rumors began circulating Friday that BlackBerry might seek to go private.
All Things D's, Ina Fried and The Loop's Jim Dalrymple are both reporting that Apple will announce a new iPhone, or maybe even two, on Tuesday, September 10th. Apple has not yet confirmed the date. Speculation continues on whether we'll see a new cheaper iPhone model, as well as a fingerprint sensor, and maybe even some unicorns. Hey, anything's possible.
Absolutely. The City of London is telling the waste disposal company Renew that it can no longer track commuters by measuring smartphone signals from Renew's trash cans. Now, Renew placed a dozen trash bins around London's square mile and recorded MAC addresses of any device with Wi-Fi enabled. Renew's CEO said the data collection was a test, and the company did not collect any personal information about device owners.
Hey, cheap Firefox phones coming to you. ZTE has announced its ZTE Open, which runs the Firefox OS, will go on sale soon in the UK and the US. £60 in the UK, $80 in the US, and you can only get it through ZTE's eBay store. Don't be too confused. If you go there right now, they have an auction for a prototype, but they're going to be doing the buy it now option for these later on. The ZTE Open came to Colombia and Venezuela 2 weeks ago.
HTC is in a bit of some dire straits financially and has turned to Iron Man for help. Yes, Robert Downey Jr. will appear in a new marketing campaign playing on what the initials actually mean. No, they won't use the has to change moniker many critics bandy about. The first video with Downey Jr. has him saying the phrase, humongous tinfoil catamaran. But my favorite, hold this cat, is also apparently in the works. Yes, HTC actually stands for high-tech company. Did you know that? We'll see if this campaign can make it stand for sells a lot of phones.
The Bitcoin Foundation says an Android OS flaw renders all Android wallets generated to date vulnerable to theft. The issue is within the Android operating system itself and the way it generates secure random numbers. If you're using a wallet app where you don't control the private key, like Coinbase and Mt. Gox, you're not affected. The Bitcoin Foundation says to update your wallet apps as the updates become available, and that key rotation is necessary.
NBC News has bought Stringwire, a service that encourages Twitter users witnessing news events to point their cameras at what's happening and stream the event live. NBC's chief digital officer, Vivian Schiller, says that the videos will be vetted, but then possibly used on NBC News.
Elon Musk's campaign to build a giant pneumatic tube connecting Los Angeles and San Francisco continues. The entrepreneur plans to announce more details of his Hyperloop, which would attempt to make the trip between L.A. and SF around 30 minutes and costs less to build than the currently planned high-speed rail, which is going to be done probably way after we're all dead.
After we're dead, yeah. That's when I'm expecting to ride it to my funeral. The Wall Street Journal reports that Apple's next iPad will use a film-based touch panel instead of a glass-based one to save on weight and thickness. The next iPad will also reportedly have a thinner bezel and exterior styling similar to the iPad mini.
The Virtuix Omni treadmill is now up for pre-order. If you pony up $500, you'll get an omnidirectional treadmill, a pair of Omni-friendly shoes, and a harness to keep you on that treadmill. The Omni has an expected shipping date of March 2014, and the U.S. shipping costs range from $60 to $90. Internationally, shipping ranges from $40 in China to $700 in Egypt.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by TechServe, T-E-K-S-E-R-V-E, New York's premier authorized Apple reseller and technology provider. But you don't have to be in New York to take advantage of what they do. They serve creative professionals at all levels, from individuals to Fortune 100 companies. And they carry a full range of Apple products. Of course, they've got iPhones, they got iPads, they got iMacs, MacBooks, iPads, all of that stuff. And they have a range of partnerships with top vendors to facilitate flexible, efficient, and creative solutions for your business needs. In other words, if you're like, you know what, I want to use some Avid editing stations and some Adobe stuff, I need some help figuring out what is the equipment I need and how do I put this stuff out efficiently, that's what TechServe does. As an example, if you've been to the Delta terminal in LaGuardia or maybe in Toronto or Minneapolis, you may have noticed every seat in the terminal is equipped with an iPad that you can use to get real-time flight updates, check your email, order some food. That was TechServe. They helped OTG Management, that's the hospitality company that made those Delta terminals, figure out how to do all that stuff, configure, install, and continue to help you. They don't just set it all up and say, good luck, we'll see you later. They train you, they help you figure it out, and they give you ongoing support. If you're considering adding iPads to your business, even just iPads, why not ensure the project's success with the world's most experienced partner? If your business is considering integrating iOS technology at your workplace, contact TechServe today and receive a complimentary iPad deployment assessment. Visit techserve.com/TNT, and TechServe will help you assess your current or future iPad needs and give you some advice. Make it a success. Why not? Do it now. TechServe, TechServe.com/TNT, and we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Joining us now, I'm always excited to have Dan Benjamin, founder of 5x5, on the show. Welcome to the show again, Dan. Good to have you, man.
Thanks. Like I was saying in the pre-show banter, anytime you need me, I will drive out here and be on your shows. I love you and you're great. Thank you for having me here.
You rock. You're the best. Thank you, Dan, for saying so. It's always good to have you.
You owe me $5.
You should know, if people, Dan's show frequency, I'll give you 10 after this, was paused so he could do this show. I'm extremely appreciative of that. You didn't have to do that. That's awesome.
We paused the show. We'll just resume later. See, that's the difference. You guys have the TV stuff, and it starts right on time. And we start whenever we're just...
Oh,
you know,
it doesn't start on time.
No. You'd fit right in here. I'm just saying.
So we paused it. We'll go right back to it. And you know what? We don't mind. This is always fun to be here. So
appreciate that. Let's start off with BlackBerry, Special Committee Strategic Alternatives. That always means sale. And they came out and said it in their press release. A couple of other interesting notes that we didn't mention in the news fuse. Timothy Daddles, former Goldman Sachs guy, he's now at TGP Capital in San Francisco, is leading the committee. So this is a guy who's learned in acquisitions, and he's in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So maybe there's some Silicon Valley possibilities there. The rest of the special committee is Thorsten Hines, the CEO, chairman of the board, Barbara Stymiest, and two telecom industry vets, Richard Lynch and Bert Nordberg. I don't know if you can read too much into the tea leaves there, but Lynch and Nordberg were brought on in February, possibly in advance of something like this. And Prem Watsa, Toronto's Fairfax Financial CEO, he's sometimes called the Warren Buffett of Canada, has resigned from the board. He's currently the largest shareholder of BlackBerry. And that's a clear conflict of interest because he acquires things, but maybe he's interested in helping to take this company private. Knowing what we know about BlackBerry's struggles and where they're headed and what they're doing, Dan, what's your best guess on what's going to happen to BlackBerry after all this is said and done?
Yeah, I mean, that's the, when I saw this news, that was exactly what I was wondering, is you've got these people who you would think, because of their involvement, that BlackBerry is well poised to become an asset for another company. I just don't see the value in BlackBerry anymore. You have their messaging platform. That's interesting, but it doesn't look good as a user acquisition, I just don't know. There's nobody excited about. Who's excited about BlackBerry, Tom? Like, who's going to want to step in and buy this if for anything other than the IP and maybe the messaging platform? Those are the only things that seem valuable for me, whatever patents and IP they have.
I always scream Dell when I see RIM up for sale or BlackBerry because they wanted to get in smartphones, and BlackBerry's corporate image works with Dell really well. HP's trying to make a phone of their own, and maybe if they want to, they can pick up BlackBerry, but I don't think that's the way for them to go. Maybe a Chinese company like Lenovo trying to get in the U.S. or Canada, really. But the question
I can
is
go along with that.
Yeah, the Chinese companies, so they run into that issue of U.S. government stopping things, but this is a Canadian company, so the Canadian companies might have issues with that as well, or the Canadian government might have issues with that as well. So I think it's probably more like an international company trying to get in to North America more than anything, or Dell, because I always say Dell. That's my prediction.
You just won't stop saying it. Well, encryption. That would be the other thing I'd throw in there, too, as what companies would be looking for. And I think it could be all of your answers, IOS. Could be Dell, could be HP, could be Microsoft. I think this company ends up getting carved up. I don't think, unless they find a venture capital investor who's willing to gamble on this, and maybe that's Prem Watson, maybe that's Fairfax Financial, that says, yeah, let's take it private so we can get out of public scrutiny and have a little more flexibility and room to move. Otherwise, nobody's going to want to buy the whole thing. They're just going to have to chop it up and sell it for parts.
Pete Mass in the chat room says, or Bezos. There's always Bezos. It's possible. You could just buy the company outright. Like with
I mean, that was something we talked about before. But that was a rumor that kind of kept coming up. Maybe Amazon would like to buy RIM back in the day.
Right, because
they never went anywhere, but
they might want to buy the handset manufacturing part of it if they need help making the handsets. But they've got some experience making tablets, so I don't know that they need them now.
Even if the company gets carved up, I'd be interested to see. Yeah, I mean, okay, well, there's the secure aspect of it for the enterprise. But more and more, I just feel like IT managers know that they have other options besides BlackBerry services. And the whole BlackBerry 10 thing isn't cutting it for the company as a whole. So, yeah, what does survive? Is it Messenger? I guess. I mean, as a legacy product, I know people are still using Messenger, but BBM, rather. But, again, there's just so many other options now to do the same stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll find out, I suppose, at some point, probably within this year. But definitely my prediction that BlackBerry would survive and Nokia would go up for sale is in the toilet now. So you can count that out for the end of the year special. NBC News buying StringWire. That's very intriguing, Sarah.
Yeah. If you haven't heard of StringWire, what it does is it kind of scours Twitter for tweets around a particular event, you know, certain hashtags or keywords. Then it sends a Twitter post to them. So if I was, I don't know, watching a parade in downtown Petaluma, I might get a Twitter at reply from StringWire asking me to click a link and point my camera to what I am seeing to basically help crowdsource the information. Then the service can stream live video from me to NBC, who just bought StringWire, without any sort of special app. Now you might say, gosh, it sounds, I don't know, a little spammy, or you get some sort of message from some company on Twitter you'd never heard of asking you to click a link. Well, you'd have to sort of be familiar with the StringWire service and wanting to participate in the whole citizen journalism thing. But as you mentioned, Tom, Vivian Schiller, who's the chief digital officer over at NBC News, says this is the sweet spot for StringWire. Whenever you see a bunch of eyewitnesses on Twitter, this is what we want to build, and that video submissions will be treated like anything that they'd put on the air anyway. So it's not as if it's just, oh, we're in a new era of immediacy and it doesn't matter as long as we're first. NBC News says, no, we definitely want to make sure that we're reporting real and true stuff and being fair. But this is an ongoing trend. The AP, Associated Press, bought a minority share in a company called Bamboozer, which is a service that helps mobilize citizen journalists. Same idea. I guess when I see these trends, I think, well, okay, is this just a way for the large companies to try to get exclusivity on what would just sort of be crowdsourced material that would float around the internet otherwise and everybody could use? Dan, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, when we talk about this, what we're really seeing at the first glimpses, and you mentioned it a minute ago, into, citizen journalism, this is really the future, I think, of media and reporting. Every single time that something big happens, You don't hear about it on a major television news network. You don't hear about it on the radio. You hear about it where? Usually like on Twitter, people tweeting. And I just felt the earthquake is the typical example. And this is, I think, a way that people are, our companies really are trying to tap into this and say, we see that this happens. People do tweet when something big happens. And we, as a network, as a news company, we get it 10 minutes later. Well, even 5 minutes later, that's a huge amount of time if you're trying to break a story. So how do you involve regular human beings who are out there? And it's not like we expect the average person walking home from the grocery store to be able to say, here's my detailed account of the news. Back to you, Pam. But what they can do is, you know, they can take pictures or they can report that, yes, this building is on fire or whatever. And they can do that immediately. And tapping into that, we're seeing just these very, very, very early steps in making this a reality. And to be honest, I think that's really cool. If you could see live pictures of an event happening, not when the reporters get there, not when somebody submits something, but in real time, that's really cool. And I think this is just the very early stages of that.
How do you balance that with the vetting, though, especially in that real time, like thinking of something like an airplane crash or something? How do you make sure, right. How do you vet that live? Because everybody gets that stuff off the internet. CNN, Fox News, they all get that stuff off the internet and show it as soon as they can, as soon as they can verify it. So the advantage here for NBC News would be able to go right to it and say, this is happening now. Maybe it's better for an ongoing story where, you know, the plane is still on fire. I mean, here's one of our citizen journalists who's showing it before our news crew could get there. I think it's more intriguing what you said about keeping an eye on Twitter to be able to break stories that the other networks haven't picked up on yet.
Right. Almost that citizens are out there and they can let people know that there's something cool going on. Maybe we can't rely on them for the actual facts, but letting us know that something is happening, that's pretty cool.
I would think they would like geolocate a bunch of different Twitter users if something live is happening, like we were just seeing in that demo video. That way you would cut down on that fraud aspect of here's one tweet that's out there that gets retweeted and the text is false and that's an issue. Yeah. But a video-based thing or images at least, if you can, cross-reference them with each other, at least then you can have a bit more of, of veracity to these actual reports as opposed to these who knows what's actually happening. I think Tom's right when it comes to the idea of ongoing events that are happening live. This is the kind of coverage you're going to get there. I think NBC or MSNBC bought Breaking News way back in the day.
NBC did,
2009, I think it was. So NBC has been kind of aggressive when it comes to figuring out what to do with news. Finding out that Twitter's breaking it, the fact that they would have this new venue of getting content quickly and true content would save them a lot of money, I would think, in the long run. Also making their news a site you want to go to or wherever they're going to be on Twitter or on the internet.
I wonder how compensation works here as well, because there are going to be certain people who are going to say, well, I'm not participating unless I get some money, because I'm basically acting like a reporter for you news organizations, and you pay your other reporters, don't you? And I'm here first. And I know that that's sort of been an issue because this is all still unfolding. Yes, you just can't have reporters everywhere in hopes that the news will break there. You know, you kind of got to rush to the scene after something happens. But for the people who are there, I wonder if, you know, it turns into something where it's like, gosh, this person has submitted quite a few videos. They're pretty good. Maybe they're our next, News at 6 guy.
Yeah. Could be the farm leagues. That's true. Yeah. All right. I know Dan and Hattie were talking about this on the frequency right before we went live. HTC enlisting Iron Man's help. Yeah, there was
something like that. Well, they hired Robert Downey Jr. They didn't actually get the rights to Iron Man yet. So HTC's got a 2-year ad campaign kicking off August 15th. The campaign starts on YouTube and then it hits movie theaters and television. The focus right now, the first phase, is figuring out what HTC stands for. The change brand platform will be rolled out in 3 phases. The first, again, what does HTC stand for? The second, HTC exclusive features like Blink Feed. And the third focuses on how HTC products makes their owners very happy. There's a 16-second trailer video right now that's out with Robert Downey Jr. that appears in a boardroom.
Focus up. Subversive thinking has arrived. Humongous tinfoil catamaran.
Now, makes me want a phone.
Yeah, ZDNet says this is HTC's largest ever marketing campaign, and Downey Jr. signed a 2-year deal. HTC says he's going to inject his own style. Dan, you heard that Tom wants to buy a phone now. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. You know, Robert Downey Jr., I'm a comic book fan, have been for my whole life, far back as I can remember. He so accurately captures everything that we've always imagined Tony Stark was, that he is now greater than the sum of himself. He now embodies Tony Stark. If Tony Stark wants an HTC, maybe I should consider an HTC. I'm not saying that I'm ready to, you know, give up the iPhone yet, but it, you know what? This does make a difference to consumers. That's my point. And that is having somebody who's cool, having a campaign that's funny and crazy. It's been a long time since we've seen something like this from a company. Half the people who have Android phones, I'll say more than half the people have Android phones, and anybody who doesn't own a Google-branded Nexus phone probably doesn't even know or care much about what kind of phone they have. They bought it because it had features at the time. HTC is trying to create a name for themselves and a brand for themselves, and it's exactly what they're doing with this campaign, and I think it's a lot of fun, and I think it could actually work for them. Because if I know HTC compared to Samsung, nobody thinks Samsung is cool. Nobody, except the people that work at Samsung. And nobody thinks HTC is cool either. But now they're doing something that's cool. They're doing something that's different, and they have a personality associated with it, connected to it, out there doing it. And we all like Tony Stark and Robert Downey Jr. and Iron Man. So this is really, really smart for them. And I can't wait to see what it turns into. I'm actually like interested to find out what this turns into. So that says something, I guess.
I don't know. I mean, that's a very optimistic way to look at it.
Robert Downey Jr., come on. Have you seen his hair? He is the best head of hair in Hollywood.
He's a lovely actor. And I actually think it's, you know, on one hand, I'm like, but wait, this is a character. And then there's HTC. But Robert Downey Jr. has a real talent of... He's kind of always Robert Downey Jr., no matter what he's playing. So you could say, yeah, I mean, he's being Tony Stark, but he's also kind of being himself. So it sort of works. But they're paying him a boatload of money to do this. I find usually when it turns into like, let's just have a celebrity try to sell this stuff because we're not doing it well on our own. That's a desperation move. It might be a great fit, but that's still what it is. And, you know, we'll just have to see. Sure, these commercials might be great, and if people don't buy HTC phones, then it's still going to be a failure of a project.
There is always a halo effect with this stuff, right? True. I mean, that's what Dan was talking about. So when you look at this stuff logically, it's always like, why would Robert Downey Jr. coming out saying, you know, tinfoil catamaran, make me want an HTC One phone? That doesn't tell me anything about the specs or the advantages of it, but it's getting people to talk about it. It's getting people's attention, and it's that association, whether we want to admit it or not, that we will all now make between the coolness of Robert Downey Jr. and an HTC phone.
Right.
And the HTC's gambling, like, you know what? We need something to pull us out of the depths of our financial woes. We need to sell more phones. This is a good gamble.
Yeah, but Samsung went negative, right? When they went with Apple, they made fun of the iPhones. They said this is outdated. Old people use it. Your parents are using it. To say that... To have, I guess, a positive ad campaign for HTC, like, you know, here's something really cool, or here's the cool for HTC. Like, that doesn't seem like, I don't know if that's going to do enough, because you can say you're really great, but unless you're going to trash the competition like Samsung did, which actually worked. When I saw that campaign, I didn't think that was going to work at all, but it did. Does HTC have to go negative to actually gain market share from Samsung?
I mean, I don't know. Wait, which of the campaigns are you talking about that you thought worked with the negative one, with the iPad comparison?
No, the where you see the people standing in line, the next big thing's already
right.
Here.
Yeah. Did that work? I mean, did that actually work? I mean, it worked for you as somebody who was watching
it. No, it worked for Samsung, making a ton of money.
For the actual numbers, yeah.
The numbers.
I mean, it didn't work for me in the public perception. I am always opposed to the kind of the negative comparison campaigns, like the new one that came out with, I don't even remember which tablet it was that has the comparison between the iPad and it's got Siri talking, and the second one just came out.
Microsoft, right?
It was the Surface, yeah.
See, I don't even remember that it's Microsoft. That shows you how effective that is, and I pay attention to this stuff.
I love that, because it's making like fun of Siri, too.
Yeah,
like, the Siri commercial with the other company.
Yeah, I don't even get it. Yeah, and that's right. You're right. I remember that it was Siri and the iPad. Like, that's not going to change my perception of something. But in this space of phone makers where they're sort of like iPhone by Apple and everybody else with Android or maybe Microsoft and something else on it, you know, then I really think that this is a way for HTC to set itself apart, maybe from the other companies, in a way that's playful and creative and not negative. So we'll see.
All right, let's take a quick break. Thank our sponsor for today's show, Squarespace. Squarespace.com. You know, I like Squarespace. I use it for my book site. I use it for Sword and Laser. It's the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to create your own professional website. I was making a post this morning, and I realized, wow, I can take an image, with permission, of course, drag it from one website into Squarespace. Boom. Image is in my post. It's that easy. Some of our audience members have been sending us tweets with a link to some of the sites they've made on Squarespace. One of them is themusicservice.net, an amazing music review site. The blog template makes it really easy to navigate. Under the new music section, you can find embedded music videos that play right in the player on the site with clips linked from YouTube or Vimeo. You can easily share posts on all your favorite social media. And the vinyl picture, it's a great background image for the banner. This is a sexy looking site, and they whipped it together in Squarespace, themusicservice.net. Just one example of all the stuff you can do with their beautiful designs, their constantly improving platform, their ease of use. Their customer support team has won a bunch of industry awards. Most recently, they got a Gold Stevie Award for outstanding service. They've gotten design awards from the FWA, the Webbies, Forbes, and more. And it's mobile ready. Don't forget about that. If you look at themusicservice.net on your phone, it's going to make sense. It's not going to be all squished or tiny. It's going to work on the screen that you're looking at it on. Search engine optimized, hosting included. Start a trial now. Don't use your credit card. They don't need one. They don't ask for one. You're not going to be able to give them a credit card until you're ready to purchase. Just start building your website. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, then you give them the credit card. And make sure to use this offer code, TNT8, to get 10% off. And to show your support for Tech News Today. Don't forget to send a tweet with hashtag TNT Squarespace. We could be talking about your Squarespace site on a future episode. We thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website. TheMusicService.net. It's a nice looking site. All right. Lytro's back in the news by saying things. What are these things, Sarah?
Yeah. Lytro CEO Jason Rosenthal told SF Gate that the company has a packed product roadmap for next year, meaning 2014, and that, quote, we'll introduce multiple what I think are just breakthrough products. I am super excited, and the world will be as well. This is also along some news confirmed by the company that they did lay off some people that worked there. Rosenthal says a small number of employees in areas like operations and shipping, product and engineering workers apparently not affected. In the last year, though, the company really hasn't done a lot of growing. It's added 5 employees. It's a small team overall, about 85, although it says it's still hiring. And at this point, I think it's kind of like, all right, well, we remember when the light show was introduced a couple years ago now, and it's the whole after you take the photo, then you can adjust the focus and the focal point, and people go, wow, that's really cool. We've never had this before. Geez, all the possibilities. Well, and then what happened? I think somebody compared it a little bit to like the segue of photography on the internet the other day, and I thought, well, that's kind of harsh, but I kind of get it, where it's really neat. But is it actually something that's going to be embraced by the mainstream, especially when you've got a base model that costs $400? And right. At that point, you're getting into SLR territory, and you've got a lot of other options. If you're a pro, then you care more about a variety of lenses and that sort of thing that Lytro doesn't necessarily offer. And if you're not, then $400 might seem really steep for a camera that is just that, a camera. Dan, do you think the public wants more from Lytro? Are there any features you're certainly hoping that they'll roll out in the next iterations?
It's hard to imagine. I mean, the main thing, again, and you just mentioned it, is price. I mean, it's $399. And the quote on this article that you've linked, it says they want to be the new software and hardware stack for everything with a lens and a sensor. So they're talking about still cameras, video cameras. So, well, that's the future, what they have right now. I don't know. I mean, I try to imagine, again, they keep saying that these are the features that professional photographers are looking for. I just don't know. I'm not really sold. I've never seen one of these in person. But it just strikes me as a weird kind of misplaced product, and I'm not really sure where they can go as far as features. I mean, I don't want to bash them. It seems cool, but like, this isn't for me at all. And I love cameras and I love photography. And, you know, again, you mentioned a digital SLR, you mentioned all the things that are happening in this super, super competitive space of point and shoot cameras. And more, like I've got a Sony DSC-RX 100, and I use this little thing all the time in a place when I used to use my Nikon D90. I don't even bring the D90 out anymore. I've got this little camera. It fits in my pocket. So the fact that they have this smaller size, yeah, that's compelling. But how are you going to compete with, you know, point and shoot cameras that are already entrenched? I don't know. It confuses me.
I think one of the bigger things with Lytro's issues were the actual design was a problem. When you try to actually take a photo, you might accidentally power the thing off because it has that unique design. It's basically it's like a tube. Mm-hmm. And that design might be kind of cool in theory, but practically speaking for photos, it was a mess. The other thing about Lytro is they had to explain how to take these photos because only certain images, if you had layers and layers of things, did it look cool to change focus. So if you had like a tree and then there was something behind that, like a gate, and something behind that, that's kind of nifty. But for the most of the times, people weren't aware of how to take these photos. So if they have better software so you can have more layers that so it tells you what to do, and the hardware itself makes more sense for taking photos because while cool, a little scope, it's not the right form factor for something like this. So I would think the next design, maybe they can figure out something more traditional that gets more people on board.
Call me when they do video.
Yeah, that too. I keep thinking as a standalone, just one more product that you have when you're thinking of buying your next camera. I'm with Dan. This seems like the tech is cool. If it was incorporated somehow into products that already are great, that would be so much more compelling than saying, oh, well, I should also have a Lytro cam for all those times that I wished I focused on something that I didn't focus on. Maybe in the surveillance market, again, video would be better, but that could NSA be kind of cool yeah. because you'd be like, wait a second, who's that guy in the middle there?
Enhanced.
He's the one who stole the gum. Ah, thank goodness we have our Lytro tech. We could put him right into focus, that type of thing. But again, that's not going to sell a ton of products either.
All right, let's go to a product I think will sell. Well, I don't know if they'll sell a ton, but it may sell better than the Lytro. The Virtuix Omni treadmill is up for pre-order, Ayaz.
That's right.
How many did you order?
I ordered 12, $500 a piece, because I'm insane, apparently. No, I didn't order a single one.
You ordered six duels. It's cheaper.
Oh, no. A lot of debt if I did that. That's insane. Okay, well, this is the gaming treadmill, if you forgot about it. 48-inch diameter platform, 20-inch ring, keeps you in the center of that in case you start moving around or the treadmill moves and you almost fall off. It stops you from falling off. It's called the Omni because it moves in every direction, right? The Omni is capable of detecting game-specific motions like jumping and crouching. $500 gets you one treadmill, a pair of shoes, a support harness. For $1,019, you get a dual version. They let you do head-to-head. You get two treadmills, three pairs of shoes, and a couple of harnesses. They're delivering, or at least the expected delivery date is March 2014. If you're watching the video now, you're seeing somebody try out the Omni with an Oculus Rift on their head, it looks like. The company notes when you're pre-ordering, it has it very specifically, the Omni does not come with an Oculus Rift, a game controller, or a PC. If you were curious, the Rift developer kit, not the consumer version because that doesn't exist, costs $300, and that's coming out in September 2013. Dan, $500 peripheral, are you going to be getting this?
No, I mean, I'm not that much of a gamer anyway, and I think even if I was more of a gamer, I don't think this would appeal to me. I mean, I like the idea of getting the kids up off the sofa, but, you know, it's pretty expensive when you compare it. I guess the closest thing that we have to this is just the regular Microsoft Kinect where it reads your movements and that seems to be pretty popular, but something like this takes up a lot of space. I mean, you know, those who have kids know that the less stuff you have in the middle of your living room, the better. So I'm not sure if this will go, but I'm not getting anything
like that. Oh, come on, this thing's cool. And for any game where you run around, this is going to totally, especially if you merge it with an Oculus, it's going to totally immerse you in the game. You're going to be in the world. You're going to be in Skyrim, running around, hunting dragons.
I guess it's cool. I mean, I'll give you that. It's very cool. But, I mean, I'm not, this isn't, you know, this is my thing.
Well, it's for somebody who's got a dedicated space, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's like the number one thing is you're like, it's cool, but you got living room and you don't want to be moving things out of the way all the time. I was actually playing a Nintendo Wii bowling with some friends yesterday. I mean, it was like, it was very annoying because basically the room would have been, the game would have been a lot more fun if we just cleared the room out, but you can't always do that in someone's living room. So yeah, this is like, it's like a cool, you put it in the garage or in a basement like Tom's got.
It's got to be in a rec room. Yeah exactly.
I mean, the video that you're showing, it shows them, they're sort of harnessed into mm-hmm. it.
Bit of a commitment there.
Yeah.
That's a safety measure.
I don't really want to be in there.
I want to fall over.
I wonder if people will like complain now if games take too long to complete. It's like I've been on this thing for 60 hours now.
Still walking.
Still walking.
Yeah, I'm
still,
in such good shape. I've been playing Halo.
Yeah, Is there a line to cross, though, where you know you're too into games if you have this in your living? You know, like, is that line just being pushed further and further and further?
I think it's always pushed further. I mean, just the Kinect itself would have been crazy 10 years ago, and now it's like standard equipment coming with the Xbox One.
I remember with the NES getting, like, calluses and sores on my thumbs from pressing the buttons so many times. I wonder if anything's going to come from this over a long period of time. That
really good,
really
calves.
Uncomfortable.
Excellent calves and good quads. Yeah, you know, I would love to see something like this make arcades come back, because like I remember back in the 80s we had arcades you'd go to these places because you would never buy these things for your house. Although I hear you can like have arcade cabinets rented to you now in San Francisco. So if this came back in these like little locations and you had this Oculus Rift attachment to it and you're able to play this at somebody else's place, I don't think you're going to have this in everybody's living room. You're not going to have this in your apartment unless you have a rec room and you have all these extra space. It just seems like gaming is demanding more and more space between the Kinect, the Wii, and now this guy. Like, this is basically, it's a fitness product. If they just sold it as a fitness product that happens to have a video game attachment, maybe it'd do better. I don't know how it's selling right now. Maybe it's doing really well.
I was actually pretty surprised to see that the price was $500. I would have expected that it would have been more than that, even though that's a pretty considerable chunk of change.
And but that comes with shoes. Don't forget, special shoes.
Shoes, yeah. Interesting. Omni-friendly.
Must be the shoes. All right, let's finish up with a couple of things that happened over the weekend. President Obama held a press conference and released a white paper about the administration's justifications of its internet surveillance program. Also, the NSA released a document doing the same, trying to provide more transparency. According to the NSA document, the internet has around 1,826 petabytes of data per day, and the NSA touches about 1.6% of that. Of that 1.6% that they touch, I guess that means they collect it, 0.025% is reviewed. So NSA analysts look at 0.0004% of the world's internet traffic, or as they say, put another way, if a standard basketball court represented the global collection, would be represented by an area smaller than a dime on that basketball court. Or put another way, by my math, NSA analysts touch, as they put it, 29.216 petabytes of data a day and actively look at 7.3 megabytes a day, which is about 2 years worth of my emails that they read per day. Probably my emails, at least now. NSA does not, this is a quote, does not and will not use a relationship with a foreign intelligence service to ask that service to do what NSA is itself prohibited by law from doing. NSA personnel must report not acting consistently with law, policy, or procedure. President Obama said in his statement, "You're hearing about the prospect that these things could be abused. Part of the reason they're not being abused is because these checks are in place." So the way I'm interpreting this, is they're saying, look, we collect around 30 petabytes a day, but we only read about 2 years of emails a day. And you shouldn't worry because nobody has caught us breaking any rules yet. And you can believe us because we monitor ourselves and we never lie to you. Do you feel better, Dan?
No. I mean, I don't care what percentage of it. Okay. I get that there's a value to having the government detecting potential terrorist crimes. I mean, that's what the point of all of this is supposed to be, right? That they are listening and checking in on things so that we can avoid horrible things from happening. And I guess for most people, like for me, I don't have secret stuff that I really care about. If the NSA knew about it, and maybe I'm naive, I'm not in this case too much and I have my conspiracies, but this just doesn't scare me in such a way because I don't have really anything that I care that much about hiding from them. But that seems opposed to many of my other philosophies. I'm willing to give up a little bit if I believe, as I'm convincing myself that I should believe, that there is a good reason behind this and that it's saving lives. And so that's
how
what
would
I tell
you
myself.
Know? That's that's the problem here. And that's my problem.
Yeah.
How would you know? They say, well, we check with ourselves. But they've even changed. Jamil Jaffer testified before Senate Judiciary. The FISA Amendments Act changed it so that the court no longer has to monitor who they're targeting or why they're targeting anymore. So they're just self-policing. And even if we believe to this day that they haven't done anything wrong, what's to prevent a future administration or an analyst tomorrow from doing something wrong? If they, you know, if they, their supervisor signs off on it or they don't get caught.
Yeah. I mean, it's there's too many potentials for there to be problems here behind the scenes. So I'm trying to be a little bit naive about it and hope that it really is just for the common good. I also have the philosophy that if you put it into an email or you say it on Twitter or in a chat or something like that, that you should have in the back of your mind that if it's put on the internet, that there's that possibility that everyone in the whole world could see it. So try to not do that as much as possible. And it's getting harder and harder in 2013 and beyond to actually do that. But that used to be very easy. But if you have something that's really super private, like tell the person in face to face if you can.
I think you're absolutely right about that from our point of view. I don't think that should be a justification for anything, but you're right.
No.
Don't ever assume anything you do on the internet is private.
It's hard not to feel at least for me, feel a little bit helpless about all of this stuff. It's like, okay, do we assume that they're never going to lie about anything? Do we assume that they're always double checking each other and doing the right thing? It's like, well, no, not really. But what choice do I have here? You know, what are my options? Complain loudly about the fact that the government is participating in surveillance that goes above and beyond. I'm kind of with Dan, where it's like you sort of have to believe it's part of the greater good, or you're going to go nuts, because I don't have the kind of tools to feel like I can make much of a change here. I don't want to say I'm throwing in the towel, but I do feel helpless about this kind of thing the more I learn about it.
Makes me want to write more interesting stuff in my communications. My stuff is so boring. It's kind of like Twitter for me. It's like I want to make sure I'm putting stuff that's valuable to people. So if the NSA is reading everything I'm doing, it should be interesting. But I mean, finding out I'm changing my floors to teak, not very exciting.
Right? Yeah.
All right, let's move on to something that really will change nothing, the randomizer.
That's the tagline for this segment every day.
That's right. We change nothing. I've got a straw poll up today for our live audience. If you're watching with us in the morning, our three randomizer choices were fall asleep to the sound of Wikipedia, which got 16%. Although I kind of like this was my personal favorite. Whatever. Nobody wants to fall asleep to this sound of Wikipedia. I understand. Failed LG G2 marketing campaign injures 20. 34%. That involved BB guns, by the way. You should go look it up. But the winner, new LED sensor generates its own power and light when you touch it, with 50% of the votes. This is research being done on piezoelectrics that could revolutionize screens. It could help with medical displays and monitors. But basically, you don't have to have a battery in the screen. You can just press the screen and it lights up. It's like a light bright, like a high-tech light bright.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, I guess it's kind of cool.
I was more interested in the LG thing.
Because, totally.
Because if HTC's marketing money, maybe Donnie Jr. needs some
hurt people. Injured by BB guns at an LG event. Let's touch some LEDs, watch them light up.
Mm. Yeah, but you don't have to have a battery.
I agree.
It's magic, Sarah.
Maybe it's because I'm thinking about my old light bright set, which was fun. But I'm sort of like, yeah, okay, next version. I don't know. I need maybe like a real world use case.
Security identification system. The battery would never go out.
Every time you record an episode of iPad Today and you play around with an app, that's less time you have to spend plugging your iPad in later.
Piezoelectric dance floor. Already in existence in Rotterdam, Sarah.
No, okay, fine. No, it's good. It's good. Yes, right. Tech.
You'd rather see it. I understand.
That's the new exclamation. Yes, tech. I like that.
Hooray for tech.
That's what we do here.
It's Monday. It's hard to believe in anything.
That's so true, isn't it? All right, let's take a quick break and thank our other sponsor, Ring Central. You've heard us tell this story about how we built the studio and we didn't want to spend a lot of money on an old-fashioned PBX-based phone system. And Russell, our IT guy, said, get a cloud-based phone system. And we love Ring Central. Zero startup costs, no hardware from PBX-type hardware to install or maintain. Ring Central allows us to easily customize all of our call handling. We can get our voicemail in our email. We can get our fax messages right on our smartphone. And now they have a new feature, Ring Central Conferencing. Get your own single conference bridge number ready for unlimited calls. Unlimited calls. Up to 1,000 participants. It's more than you'll probably need. Lots of features. You can mute participants, get caller count, record conferences, and more. It's easy to use. Works with your desk phone, your iPhone, your Android phone, or even the RingCentral soft phone if you get one of those. It's free with the monthly service. RingCentral offers all-inclusive pricing as low as $20 a month per user, and you can start right now. Get a 30-day risk-free trial, and they have a special offer for our listeners. When you buy one desk phone, get a second phone free, up to 20 phones. So call this number designated for our listeners. It's 800-543-9980. That's 800-543-9980. Again, 800-543-9980. Or you can also go to ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. That's ringcentral.com. Promo code TWIT. And we thank Ring Central for their support of Tech News Today. Got anything on the calendar today, Sarah?
Yeah, and it's going to make all those Wii U haters maybe make the console seem a little bit more interesting. Angry Birds, Rovio's Trilogy is coming to the Nintendo Wii and Wii U tomorrow, August 13th.
Woohoo! Woo. Oh, yes. I don't know. I have a Wii U. Maybe I'll turn it on or plug it in.
You should think about that. Let's see what's in
there. Incoming message.
It's a message from Rich in lovely Cleveland who says, Tom and Posse, I just finished a two-week experiment for trying to use web apps exclusively on my phone, so I was really interested to hear about Amazon's inclusion of web apps within their app store. Ayaz made a great point when he talked about discoverability. My main problem was finding any kind of web apps outside of Facebook and Twitter. In fact, before Amazon threw in its hat in the ring, one of the most common results for searching web apps was Apple's defunct web app index, featuring such classics as Carbon Footprint Calculator, Staff Selection, none of which have been updated since 2010. If Amazon could put together some quality apps and find ways to let developers get paid in-app, it could really open the door for mobile web app design, which seems to have stagnated for the most part. While native apps will always have an edge in responsiveness and UI hooks for an individual platform, it would be nice to have a variety of platform-agnostic web apps that give a modicum of functionality.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about, how Apple was really big into the web apps thing when the iPhone first launched before they got the App Store. I'm curious if Apple has abandoned that. That was a Steve Jobs belief, and the App Store became so successful that they just let it go. Do you think it's that Apple will resist that sort of thing, or do we see like iOS 8, maybe they try to get on board with that? I don't know.
Maybe they'll bother to index it. I don't know. They seem to be very iTunes heavy. The fact that they even had a web index, or at least an index for that, has been updated for 2-3 years. I don't think it's coming back.
All right. Well, that is it for this show. Thank you, Dan Benjamin. 5x5.tv. If you want to find out, you have amazing shows over there. If people haven't checked out the network, they absolutely should look. You do high quality stuff with great people.
I'm too kind. Thank you. We do our best. It's always great to be here.
Anything particular? Well, I appreciate that. Anything in particular going on you want to tell folks about?
I can't talk about it yet. It's something really good coming soon, but I can't talk. But you'll know about it. You'll know. And in fact, I'm bringing you into the inner circle. I'll tell you about it because you will know about it. But yes, it's very soon. Right. Very soon.
Very cool. I can't wait. I think I have an inkling, a tingling feeling.
Yeah, so. I think you do. I think
555.tv. Check it out, folks. Don't forget also, don't forget because we haven't told you yet. I'm announcing right now, Open Mic, the show we usually do at the end of the year. We keep saying we're going to do another one during the rest of the year. Well, we're finally going to do it. Thanks to Jason Hell for remembering and coordinating this. Open mic submissions for our Labor Day episode. Don't have to be Labor Day related. Just send an email to tnt@twit.tv and use the subject line open mic, M-I-C. Tell us about yourself, why we should pick you, same as we do at the end of the year. We'll record the episode Wednesday, August 28th at 9 a.m. Pacific. So you will need to be available at that time. And then we will put it in the feed on Labor Day. So get in there and send us some submissions. TNT at twit.tv, subject line, open mic. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, TNT@twit.tv, and you can give us a call and leave us a voicemail anytime, 260-TNT-SHOW. Denise Howell, host of This Week in Law, joins us tomorrow. We'll see you then.